You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
My grandfather picked me up and took me to see Metallica and Korn at the Great Western Forum. That was the first live concert. I think I was 11 years old. And they were on the Load Tour. And Korn was just breaking out at the time. I mean, they had some success, but they weren't the juggernaut that they would later be, just in the matter of a couple of years, I feel like, after they did that tour with Metallica. And it was a great experience. I remember distinctly my grandfather sitting next to me and falling asleep, and it was amazing. He did that with everyone, though. So again, I have two older brothers, and they got to go to some other really cool concerts too. My grandfather used to work staff pro, and so he'd get discounted tickets for us, and he'd take us to different concerts. And then he wasn't working staff pro anymore by the time I got to go to concerts with him, but he had the tendency, even though he was really a metalhead and loved the music, he just had a tendency to just like sit there and fall asleep to this live heavy bands just going nuts.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I hope you guys had a glorious weekend. I most certainly did, because just last week I released 3 collaborative brews. That's right. I dropped Vox and Overhops, the double dry hop New England IPA with Overhop Canada. This glorious collab returned last week, and I'm super stoked about that. It's just as delicious as the first time, and I'm so stoked that it's back. I also dropped a very, very cool black IPA with the wonderful humans from Microbrasserie Luxembourg. This is a 7.2% dark ass IPA. It was so malty and rich that they added a bunch of pineapple puree to it to liven up the tropical profile and balance it out. It's really killer, and I'm super stoked about that one. I also dropped Brutal Juice, the Imperial Fruited Sour, which was brewed by Brewski in collaboration with Zab Coffee. Brewski is one of Montreal's sickest breweries, and Zab is one of the sickest coffee roasters. It was a no-brainer to pair them together to create Brutal Juice, the Imperial Fruited Sour, with black raspberries, black currants, blackberries, and maple syrup. This monster clocks in at 8.5%, and it is oh so smooth. I'm so stoked that all 3 of these collabs happened. This Vox and Hops episode is brought to you by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. They put on one of Montreal's sickest metal festivals, and trust me when I say this, it's the absolute truth. I have played festivals all over the globe, and Heavy Montreal is up there with the best of them. They are now starting to schedule some concerts for this coming fall. I'm very excited about that. They got Ginger scheduled. They also got All Them Witches. They got some more stuff coming up, and you should definitely go and buy your tickets now via the link in the description of this podcast if you're planning on going to either of these shows, because these suckers will sell out. I'm so stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Last week, I took some time to introduce a new Vox and Hops crew member. I'm going to do the same thing today. I'm very, very excited to announce that Mihaela Petrescu has joined the Vox and Hops crew as my official photographer. She is phenomenal. She is actually the photographer that did the original photo shoot when I launched Vox and Hops. I'm super honored to have her join the crew. She is one of the best photographers out there, and I'm so, so stoked to work with her. I can't introduce her any better than she can introduce herself. So here, right now, is Mihaela, letting all of you Vox and Hops heads know a little bit more about her.
So I'm a photographer for over 10 years now. I've shot a bunch of shows. I've shot for labels, for promoters, for so many people. I've started shooting for Thorium magazine. Then at some point, I've started to get to work for Voir. I worked for Decibel. I've worked for many bands. I've worked for Nuclear Blast at some point as well. I got to be lucky to be a 70,000 tons photographer also this year for 2020 before the pandemic started. And soon I'm going to launch my brand, which is going to be called Mihaela Tour. You can actually find me on Instagram, Facebook. Basically, the point is going to be like a content creator for behind the scene, I should say. It's actually more not just focused on the bands, but what's happening with the bands, you know. The point of me on tour, it's not going to be only on tour. So the word tour here is touring of anything you can think about. Being, you know, just like you and me, Matt, we're going to eat at a restaurant and let's see what Matt Nagaki loves, you know. It's basically to show the world how the music industry is for real.
Hell yes. I'm so, so stoked to have Mihela as a part of the crew. We've been working on a whole bunch of really, really cool stuff, and there's more to come. I'm so excited about this new Vox and Hops crew family. Before we jump into today's episode, I would just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, I'm also asking you to rate it and write a review, because when you do that, more people just like yourself will be able to discover the Vox and Hops metal podcast. And that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, on today's episode, I am very stoked to be with Johnny Christ of Avenged Sevenfold, and he's also the host of the Drinks with Johnny podcast. This is Vox and Hops episode number 256.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm with Johnny Christ of Avenged Sevenfold and Drinks with Johnny. How are you doing, Johnny?
I'm doing fantastic, man. Thanks for having me on the show.
Super stoked to have you. I always like to start things off with a very easy yet complex question of how did you cope with the glorious year of 2020?
Oh, man. Cope with it. I guess just doing my podcast kind of helped me. I'm kind of a big extrovert, so it was kind of tough for me to not do all the things that I wanted to do. Through these Zoom chats, luckily enough, we were able to have technology out there. I mean, it's been around for a couple of years, but no one really knew about it until all this stuff started happening. Now that we're using it, and it's been great being able to still stay connected to new people and old friends and things of that nature. So, I mean, that's helped me through. And then, you know, luckily I have a young son and a wife, and there's I wasn't just stuck in a house by myself. You know, we were able to, you know, a lot of people could have it a lot worse. You know, I've got a decent sized house and places where we could go into different rooms and stuff and get creative. Early on there was a lot of getting blue tape out and setting up obstacle courses for my son around the house and stuff, but going in the pool, things of that. So I can't complain too much, man. It wasn't that hard for me to cope. The main thing was not being able to get out around people.
Absolutely. But it was a blessing. I have young children as well, to have a whole summer at home, not out there playing the festivals as we normally do as musicians. It's almost a blessing to have a whole summer off, and it's not our decision to do it.
Yeah. It's a silver lining, I guess, really. I mean, it's just like, well, I didn't really have a choice in the matter, but here I am. So let's just enjoy it. Let's be in the moment. You know, that's kind of the idea, right?
Absolutely. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends and talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. What drink do you have on your side there today, Johnny, that we're going to be sharing?
Well, I got a beer that was recommended to me by Mr. Kegs. I've become friends with a couple of the employees there. So I go over there and I'm like, what do you guys got new? So I'm probably going to butcher the name of this. This one's called Broweridge. It's a new one out of Los Angeles, and it's their Bounce West Coast IPA.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Very nice, because I also have a West Coast IPA, which is actually interesting because
nice.
Here in Montreal, where I'm from, it's, you know, the New England IPA haze craze is completely just blown up, is on fire. All the breweries are doing that right now. So I'm stoked to see a West Coast when a brewery does that. This is a killer young brewery. They just won third best brewery in the world, new brewery in the world, on ratebeer.com. So massive cheers to Cinquième Baron. This is their Cypress. I'm going to crack this. Let's talk a little bit about beer. Let's talk about your first beer, Johnny. Do you remember the first beer you ever drank?
Whoa, that's going back. I'd like to say that it wasn't as young as I was, but if I'm being honest, it was, I want to say I snuck my first beer when I was probably about 12 years old. And if I remember correctly, it was a Bass, which is a lager, like, one of the least expensive lagers out here, I would say. And I think we snagged it from an adult's fridge and went to a park. And I actually shared it with a buddy of mine that was, into it as well. And, you know, we had like a few sips of it and we're like, oh man, I'm so fucked up. And I was like, no, I'm not. This is, but I believe that was probably my first beer ever.
Very, very cool. Close to my first experience as well, being a little too young, sharing stuff with your friends. It's always like that. Cheers. Thank you for coming and having a,
cheers,
a drink
yeah.
with me.
Thanks.
Sure now.
Hey, thanks for giving me a reason to drink at 11 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about craft beer now. This is delicious. It has a perfect piney bite. Super killer. Their can art's always amazing. How about you? Let's talk about your first craft beer, from that first bass, sipping it with your friends, to something that opened you up to more the art of beer. What would be that first craft beer experience?
You know, it was probably somewhere on the road. You know, Zachy was always the guy that was bringing around some different IPAs and stuff. And I want to say there was a couple of them, like Bell's Two Hearted Ale. I think it was one of the first. That was one of the first ones where I was like, I could really get into this kind of beer. You know, it was like, before that, it was a lot of lagers, a lot of, you know, Guinness was a staple before that for me. I loved Guinness. But yeah, I believe that was kind of like my first introduction to IPAs. I guess I could go back a little further and say a Sierra Nevada, India Pale Ale. A few of those when me and Shadows would go up and get tattooed in NorCal, we'd always make a stop at a restaurant that serves really great steak, and we get Sierra Nevadas with it. I don't know why. That was just like every time we'd go for a weekend and go get tattooed up north, and we'd drive up there together. And yeah, we'd stop in and grab a Sierra Nevada and a steak. And so I guess between those two was kind of when I first started getting into IPAs. Now craft beers, you know, it's like I guess that's considered more when it's more of a local kind of beers that, you know, have, you know, a lot of those I picked up in San Diego when visiting my wife's friend's family. That's a little removed there. Sorry to go down that road. But yeah, my wife's friend's parents had a condo in San Diego, and we'd go down there and check out some of the local breweries there. And that was a lot of fun.
Awesome. San Diego has a killer craft beer scene. Just super exciting. Always fresh, vibrant. Love it. Love it. Now let's talk about you growing up. I want to hear about the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up, what music was playing in your house when you were not in control of the music? What music did your parents or guardians listen to?
I kind of had both sides of it, to be honest. There was, there was a lot of, from my mother's side, she was an aerobics teacher. So, in the 80s, and that meant a lot of, dance pop music of the time, you know, in the 80s it was Michael Jackson, Gloria Estefan, to name a few. There was so much others too, that I'm drawing a blank on right now, but, a lot of that music. And then from my father's side, he was a big metalhead.
Really?
It was all Metallica, AC/DC, Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin. I mean, it was all the great hard rock and metal bands of the 70s and 80s. That was really what I grew up on, before it was my decision to do stuff. Yeah.
That is incredible. And I have not mentioned this on the podcast yet, but my mom was an aerobics instructor as well.
Oh, Rod.
It's really, really.
We have a lot in common, dude.
Like
we got beer and our parents like growing us up the same. There's got to be something to that, right?
It's unbelievable. My mom taught aerobics for many, many years, and it was a whole bunch of that exact style of music. And I discovered metal through my dad, who was super into AC/DC, into all the same bands. They could have been friends. Very interesting.
Yeah. Absolutely. But I enjoyed both sides of it, to be honest. You know, on the way to school, I'd predominantly get dropped off by my mother, and we'd listen to the pop stations. And then when my dad picked me up, he'd put on the cassette at the time that was, you know, it was anywhere from all the metal and hard rock acts I mentioned to Muddy Waters and Jimi Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan. And, at a very young age, I learned to have an eclectic taste for music kind of by force. And I just kind of carried that with me because, I mean, there was some stuff they put on that I didn't like, but for the most part, I was like, oh, I could get into this, you know?
What would have been that first band that was your band, something that, you cherished, that was yours, that almost bothered your parents?
Oh man, I don't know if there really was one, to be honest. You know, like, I mean, I considered Guns N' Roses to be my band, even though my brother was the one that showed it to me, you know. But I did take a stronger kinship to some of that stuff than my two older brothers did. So it's hard to say. I mean, yeah, I guess, yeah, there would be Guns N' Roses, their first kin band. I guess Primus in the 90s was probably one that, like, no one else in my house had introduced me to. I considered all the punk rock bands that I found, you know, I consider them mine, to be honest. But if I'm being completely honest, I found all those through my brother's CDs, you know, so it's hard to say. But I've done a podcast with a couple of my heroes so far, and NOFX, and I told them, I was like, this is the first record, that CD that I bought with my own money was Green Day Dookie and S&M Airlines by NOFX on the same day. And those were the first ones that I was able to go down to the store with my own allowance and grab something. And I mean, Pearl Jam was one too. I mean, shit, man, it runs the gamut in me that I'm just like, and then of course, over the years, I'm the more music interested person in the family. So I've introduced them to several styles of music, but you know, at an early age, I was the youngest of a family of five. So it's hard to say I discovered stuff on my own, because some of it I did, but it's hard to find. Like, Homegrown, I guess, would be a band that I discovered on my own too. You know, so it's hard to say.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Let's talk about your first shows now. How about the first show that you went to go watch, your first live music experience? Do you remember that?
Yes, very, very, very well. My grandfather picked me up and took me to see Metallica and Korn at the Great Western Forum. That was the first live concert. I think I was 11 years old. And they were on the Load Tour. And Korn was just breaking out at the time. I mean, they had some success, but they weren't the juggernaut that they would later be, just in the matter of a couple years, I feel like, after they did that tour with Metallica. And it was a great experience. I remember distinctly my grandfather sitting next to me and falling asleep, and it was amazing. He did that with everyone, though. So again, I have two older brothers, and they got to go to some other really cool concerts too. My grandfather used to work staff pro, and so he'd get discounted tickets for us, and he'd take us to different concerts. And then he wasn't working staff pro anymore by the time I got to go to concerts with him, but he had the tendency, even though he was really a metalhead and loved the music, he just had a tendency to just like sit there and fall asleep to this live heavy bands just going nuts. I mean, one of the all-time ones that I missed out on, and I still bring this up to my mother, that so my dad was going to take me and my brothers, and I got asked out, and it was Metallica and Guns N' Roses when they came through, because my parents that thought I was too young for, or my mother rather thought I was too young for it. And to this day, I'm like, I was like in third grade. I was probably 8 years old. So it might've been the right call, but I was also like, screw you. I really wanted to go to that show.
Was that like 91? Was that with Faith No More opening?
Yeah. I don't remember who was open locally here. Cause as you know, like different stents, you know, they might have a opener. So I can't say for sure that was that, cause I was not there, but it was like 91. Yeah.
That's exactly. I'm glad I was not at that Montreal gig. Cause that's when
that was the big,
whole
that was
riot
the,
happened.
Dude, you guys get all sorts of riots. I was just rewatching. I was just rewatching from 97. I don't know if you're a wrestling fan at all, but I was rewatching the Montreal Screwjob with Bret Hart.
Hell yeah.
And I was like, damn, man. Like, between that, and that was only 6 years removed from like the same, I don't remember if it was the same amphitheater.
It wasn't.
Same
no,
arena.
It wasn't. No, no.
Oh, two different arenas?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
In 97, the Screwjob was in the Montreal, was at the Molson Center.
Is it the Molson Center? Oh, okay. So yes. But the 91 with Guns N' Roses and Metallica was at the Olympic Stadium, which is a notoriously horrible sounding venue here. It's just like a giant concrete block. It looks like a spaceship. It's a disaster. It's an eyesore. They built it for the Olympics.
For music concerts.
No, it's basically been vacant for the past so many years since the Expos have left us.
Yeah. Gotcha.
How about your first time on stage?
First time like ever, or first time professionally?
Let's start ever and then work our way up to it.
So the first time I was ever on a stage, doing anything was playing bass, and it was like a middle school talent show. And I think it was in sixth grade, and me and my buddies did a cover of Blink-182's Damn It.
Hell yeah.
And I played bass and sang. Sure, my vocals were terrible. I found out later that I couldn't sing. But at the time, I thought I could pull it off a little bit. You know, it was punk. I could sing a little bit of punk. But, you know, it was a lot of fun. That was when I first had that attention. I dressed the part a little bit. I put a hat on sideways and thought I was, you know, the shit. I was 12 years old, 12 or 13, whatever it was. And, you know, there was some girls who loved Blink-182 in the front row that went to school with us that were just cheering us on. And I was like, yeah, this is kind of what I want to do. I kind of have an inkling of an idea before that, but that was the first moment that, like, this is really cool to be on stage. And even if it's these five girls that are our friends just cheering us on, I'm okay with that.
How about that professional time?
Professional time, the first professional time would have been when I joined the band Avenged Sevenfold. And that would have been in 2002. The very first show was in Tempe, Arizona. I remember that we drove out together on. And it was a venue probably would have held 100 people to 200 people, something like that. And they had filled it up decently, I'd say at least halfway. So, I mean, it didn't look bad. And so it was pretty intimidating. Like, that's the first look. I was just like, okay, let's go. I had just learned the songs a couple weeks prior, and I didn't know what it meant to professionally play on stage. Like, before, you play on stage and, you know, you have your mess ups and you kind of laugh about them and everything. But I was like, I took that way more seriously. So every wrong note or wrong change I would go to, I really, like, it stuck with me for a while after that. I was like, oh, I could do so much better than that. But I was like, you know, those nerves kick in the very first time. So I blame it on the nerves. But at the time, we didn't get enough beer before we got on stage.
That's where I was going. I was going to say, how do you cope with your nerves now?
Well, now it's not so much anymore. But, you know, no, for a while. And, but we've never been big drinkers before shows or anything like that. Like, I think one time at the end of that little, like, 2-week tour, I drank a little too many before we went on stage in San Francisco. And after the show, the guys were like, yeah, you can't do that anymore. And I was like, okay, cool. Because it was like the last 4 or 5 days of that 2-week stint I did with the guys, that they offered me the job to continue to stay on.
Yeah, yeah. There's a fine line enjoying beers before stepping up on stage.
Yeah, it's a very fine one, and you have to really learn it.
And it's different for everyone, which is that's the super interesting. You have to learn it yourself. You have to know when is too much and what is too much. My guitarist has had a superstition for many years that he couldn't even have a sip because then he would play wrong. It was like a curse. He's gotten over it since I drag him out to all the craft beers bars around the world now, and he's a huge enthusiast as well. So he's sort of forgotten that so that he can enjoy some craft beer with me.
Yeah. Our late drummer was the same, you know, and I think we all kind of adapted that for a very, very long time. Like, there was, you know, at least a decade where none of us would even touch a sip before, you know, going on stage. And then, you know, here and there you're in a place where you have an opportunity to go to a nice lunch and have a beer, and you could do that. And you get to a certain maturity level where you can do that and not let it continue to perpetuate for the rest of the night until you hit the stage at 8 o'clock and you're, or 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, whatever the fuck it is, you know, and you've been drinking all day. That's when it gets bad.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the podcast. Let's talk about drinks with Johnny. How did this start? Let's just start with one of those. It's a boring question, but I am curious since I am a podcaster.
No. It's to me, it's not very boring because I'm doing it. So I appreciate you asking that. No, it really started off with a conversation with the guys in the band, and we were talking about doing some YouTube stuff, and some ideas. Like, does anyone have any ideas for our YouTube channel? It's doing really well, but we want to add to it a little bit if we can here. And my original idea was like, it was revolved more around musicianship and playing and stuff. And I was like, well, how about, you know, I've got this bar. I just had remodeled my house and put a bar in it. And I was like, well, I got this bar. What if I want to learn how to make cocktails anyway. So I'll use this to kind of force me how to make cocktails. And, I'll learn how to make these cocktails, and then I'll play a bass riff or a guitar riff or something that makes me feel the way that this cocktail makes me feel. You know, I'll come up with something. It'll be, you know, a 5 or 10 minute video of me showing how to make the drink and showing how to play the riff, whatever it may be. And it would be sporadic and everything. And then over the time before we even started filming those, I was like, well, what if I made the cocktail and had some of our friends that are like local around come in and just like have a quick chat. And that would be the episode. It'd be like, you know, 10, 15, 20 minute episode, but we'll make it real quick. And I soon found out that those episodes would not go quick because everyone would, it'd be just like us hanging out. It's, mm-hmm. it's my buddies hanging out at the fucking bar. I'm making cocktails and we're shooting the shit. Right. I was like, well, that was a nice try. And then I would send, you know, almost 2 hours of footage to my editor and director and ask him to make it a 20 minute video. And he's like, I don't know how to do that. He pulled it off a couple of times. And then a couple of times we were like, well, we'll make it two parters and everything. And there was never a rhyme or reason when we released things either at the time when we were doing it on the Venge Sevenfold YouTube channel. And everyone could go check those out. They were a lot of fun. And it's fun to go back to those and see the evolution of what's happened because it was because of that. Those chats lasting so long, my buddy was like, hey, you know, I'll still make you the 20 minute episodes for the YouTube channel, but I think you should take the entire audio file that I have and release it as a podcast. And I was like, well, what the shit is a podcast? And I mean, I'd heard the term before. Everyone's heard of Joe Rogan and things of that nature. But this was, gotta remember, this was in 2019. We're only 2 years removed from literally the first episode I did was a 5 minute episode in March of 2019. So we're literally coming up on the 2 year anniversary. And as I said, it was a very different thing than what I'm doing now. So I'm learning how to podcast along the way. He's showing me stuff. I'm listening to other podcasters and going, you know, this is actually really cool because I've been on the other side of so many of these interviews where, you know, they're just trying to get a headline. They're just trying to get some kind of thing. It's not an actual conversation. They're asking you a question. They're not even really listening. Mm-hmm. They're on to the next question. And that's not fun. It's not fun for me. It's not fun for the guy. I mean, I get it. It's his job. That's what the editor sent him out to do. You know, I totally get that. And that's the way it's been done for so long. And, you know, these 20 minute interviews where, all right, give me your 10 questions. Let me just go at it. And we'll see where we go from there. I just lost the light. I thought about that. I was like, well, how can I make it a little different? I was like, well, as you're doing a little icebreaker with a drink. But then, you know, you notice some people don't drink. So, and that's fine. You know, more power to them. So you don't get that icebreaker, but I was like, oh, how do I change it? How about I have this chat with these people, some I know, some who I haven't, and I'll send them the audio file before I put it out. So they can be completely free of whatever they want to say. I can edit it. I know how to do that. It's super easy to pull something out if they don't want it. But I send them a little thing, a little note says, hey, speak freely, ask me questions. This is a conversation. This isn't a, you know, an interview, or traditional sense. And, we kind of went from there. And then I learned that quickly that you can't be sporadic with the podcast. It's got to be weekly at least. And I was like, oh shit, I really got a lot of work to do. And I got a lot of learning to do real fast. And that's kind of where we started season two. We started banking some episodes and we're like, okay, cool. Now I know how to do this. And along the way, we had a lot of hiccups. You know, we only had maybe 6 or 7 episodes in person because it was February of last year for the start of season two. And everything else, we had to learn how to do this. So at every point that we were evolving as a show, I was having to learn something new, which I take as a blessing because I'm like, well, now like I don't have to have everybody in person, you know, moving forward, I'll be able to talk to people like yourself who are on the other side of the country or the world. And I don't have to wait till our schedules align. We can just make it happen. And then when our schedules align in person, hopefully we do that too, you know? And, it's all been a learning curve. And I mean, I think I went a long way around the block to answer your question.
No, it's perfect.
I mean, that's where it came from. And now we feel confident, that we've learned a little bit of this business and as everything else, you could always get better at it. But There's an art form to it and talking to people. And I've never had a problem talking to people. Now that's not a problem, but the art of podcasting and icebreakers and really just getting to know someone and listening to them is such a huge part of it. You could talk to people, but listening to people, as my wife would tell me, is not my strong suit.
That's something that I learned very, very early on in the podcast, was that I was going to listen to people, because I also listened to a lot of podcasts prior to launching Vox and Hops. What podcasts were the ones that you were studying?
The one that my wife started listening to a lot of these cult and murder podcasts that she was turning me on to. And I was like, we'd be driving, we go down to the desert or what have you, like a little road trip. And she started showing me this stuff and I was really interested in it. And of course, that was a very different way of podcasting, because they're kind of just historians going back and telling the stories behind it. But I was like, okay. And, there's a voice to it. And when they come in and ask, if you want to support the show, there's this way and that way to do it. And they always have these really cool voices when you're talking about. And I was like, okay, that's one way to do it. And then I found a wrestling podcast called 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff.
Hell yeah.
Shadows turned me on to it. And he's like, hey, you're getting into podcasts. You should listen to this one. It covers, the Monday Night Wars and everything. And that's where it started. If anyone else is a fan of that podcast, it started with the Monday Night Wars between WCW and WWF. And it has evolved in so much of just the in-depth of the wrestling business at this point. And I started listening to that, and there's a guy, the co-host is Conrad Thompson, really kind of getting things out of Eric Bischoff. And I was like, that is the way to talk to someone. Ask the questions, come back, and then if you feel so inclined, call their bullshit and have some fun with it. And that's what he would do. And I was like, that is a great way of podcasting, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And even if it's not a great way of podcasting, that's the way I'm going to do it. And I don't bust anyone's balls too much, but it's mostly trying to get the guest over. I want my guest to come on the show and make it theirs too. I don't want it to just be mine. I think there's an art to that. I think that's what. And then going back to 83 Weeks, I think that Conrad has now, he's got like, I want to say it, half a dozen podcasts he does with these different wrestlers. So he's on podcasting every week. And he's a very successful man outside of this before he even started it. And I was like, this is really cool. And I reached out early on in 2018, and we got Eric Bischoff to come on our podcast and do a podcast. And I was like, when my producer Sam was like, I'm going to get him, I was like, I kind of laughed at it. It's like, yeah, whatever. This guy was the CEO of fucking WCW in the 90s and the biggest height of the WCW. There's no way he's going to talk to me. Lo and behold, we had a fun chat about beer and 90s wrestling. And, now every once in a while I see him on TV, I give him a text on AEW and say, hey, it's great to see you there again, man. Happy birthday. When it was his birthday, he texts me like, yeah, thanks, Johnny. And hopefully we'll get to share a beer in person sometime down the line, but he's in a different place. And, we'll have to wait till our paths cross again. But so, moments like that is another thing that really got me into podcasting. I was like, man, I'd love to just talk to these people, and get to know, and it doesn't have to be a super successful person like Eric Bischoff. Just anyone who's gotten to some level of success or something that they have an interest in and are following through with that. I want to know why they do that. Like it could be a professional bowler or just like what was it? Did you see Kingpin and you're like, I got to fucking do that? I don't know. Like what is it?
I love that. It's true. It's just, connecting with someone in a podcast format, you get so deep, people very well from an instant of not knowing someone till the end of a podcast episode with a guest. I feel like there's a kinship that is formed just about every single time. And, I'm excited to get out in the world once we're allowed to do that and to meet the hundreds of people that I've spoken to throughout the past year. And to have that beer in person, it's going to be a glorious, glorious moment. It was really easy for me with Vox and Hops to get guests because I asked my friends. I imagine it was the same thing for you. But you do have a dream list because you got Eric Bischoff, which is amazing. Are there still some monster people on that dream list that you would like to speak to?
Absolutely. And some of them, Some of them are just heroes of mine that I actually have rubbed elbows with, but never actually sat down and had an intimate conversation, for lack of a better term. Guys like Matt Freeman and Lars and Tim of Rancid, we've done Warped Tours together, and they've always been so kind to me. But we never really just sat down and had a chat like that. And I'd love to do that with them. Les Claypool would be a great one.
Oh, yeah.
That's in the music side. I'd love to talk to The Rock. I know that's a pretty big ask, but
Dwayne
The Rock Johnson, talk to him about his tequila, get after it, you know, and he's had such an amazing, amazing life. I don't know if you're watching the Young Rock on TV right now.
I'm not, but I ate up Ballers.
Oh, Ballers. Great. I mean, everything that guy touches, it's just fucking amazing. So I'd love to talk to someone like that. It's just like, why do you have the Midas touch? You know, you just clearly have the Midas touch. Like, no one brings up the Midas touch these days, but that's one person that I could say, he's just got the Midas touch, man. Everything he does is just fucking gold to me. And I mean, there's a long list of, you know, who's who that I would, you know, I'd love to talk to, but, it did start out, a lot of friends, you know, that's exactly where it started. And over the time, it's just, I've got a great team. My producer, Sam, has no fear when it comes to finding out the yes or no answer. He just goes out and, you know, that's how we've landed some bigger people that maybe not necessarily would have been on the podcast, but guys like giant A-list actors like Joe Manganiello ended last season, you know, and if Sam hadn't pursued that one over and over, I don't think it would have happened.
you mentioned that you send the audio files to your guests before you release the episodes. I've never done that, and I'm interested in that. How often does someone come back with a, could you please edit this out section? This section out, please.
I'd say it's pretty rare. You know, because again, going back to the way that I try to speak to someone, or it's more of a chat-based thing. I don't need a headline out of anyone. I'm not trying to get a headline. Like, I don't have a news editor or a magazine editor coming after me and trying to make sure, oh, you got to get the headlines, kid. You got to do this. It's like, nah, I don't, you know, that's not, I have a very, very lovely gig in Avenged Sevenfold. This is just fun for me. You know, like, I don't need all that stuff. You know, I'm not looking to become a journalist. I generally enjoy having these conversations and getting to know people on a more personal level. As I said, guys I've known before that I haven't done that with, or even very close friends. I want to get further into that, you know? I guess that's just the extrovert in me. As I said before, I walk away from conversations like this one or other ones where I just shut up and listen, just energized.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And, that's just what it is to me. So yeah, to answer the question more directly, I'd say it's been a handful of times, where it's something simple and they're just like, hey, you know, they've never really said that before, and I'll get like, it usually comes from a publicist.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
And I totally respect that. That's their job. They should be protecting their clients' well wishes. And I totally respect that. That's where it comes from. That's why I send it to them. Cause I'm like, yeah, totally. We had a great conversation regardless if I got something that they've never said before or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great conversation. That's mm-hmm. all it is. Cause it's me as if we were to run into each other at a bar or a party, I say, and just sit down and have a chat.
I love that. It's all about connection. I love that.
Absolutely.
I love that. Has there ever been a conversation that has gotten away from you that you wish you could redo?
Several. The early ones, I'd say. I'd say the early ones. I'd say, well, I wouldn't say gotten away from me. I mean, there's such a learning curve for me because I just went in and I started releasing the audio before I even knew what podcasting was. Like our producer was, or our director was releasing the audio, and I was just like, I was more focused on the video side of things, which is very different. And, you know, I was kind of over talking some people at the beginning. I have to be completely honest with that, where I'd be like, I would listen to them, but I would also be like, oh, that's really funny. I know where to go from there. I'm a stand-up comedian all of a sudden. I know how to do this. I don't. So, you know, it's like, it was a learning curve. There was one like, who I'm really good friends with, Smelly of NoFX. He's a great dude. And you know, that's one where I get a lot of comments where like, oh, just let him talk, guy. And I was like, sorry, man, we were having fun. And I didn't even see it as me stepping over any toes. But I guess when I look back at it, I'm like, ah, I could have backed off a little bit more. But like, I guess those are the things. So like getting away from me, I haven't really had that yet. I've had moments where like, just learning moments in general where I'm like, I could have done that better, but, I haven't really had ones yet, knock on wood, where I'm just like out of my element and this guy's just beating the shit out of me or something. I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm trying to put them over anyway. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I'm not trying to beat them down so they don't try and beat me down, you know, mm-hmm. But however, for whatever reason, I haven't felt like I've just been completely lost yet.
Excellent. We don't want to feel like that at all.
No.
The number you have reached is 100.7 WMMS.
It wasn't just a radio station, it was a lifestyle.
Cleveland is a rock and roll city for sure.
I feel like Metropolis.
Get down!
The Wrath of the Buzzard. WMMS. Cleveland.
The rise and fall of one of the most iconic radio stations in America. Profiles. The Wrath of the Buzzard. PROH Files. Subscribe now wherever you get podcasts.
I don't know if this has ever happened or if you've released something like this, but Cryptopsy just released our own craft beer. Has Avenged Sevenfold ever released a craft beer?
We have not. We've discussed it. I mean, shit. We discussed it probably 10 years ago, the first time. And, you know, at the time, I think maybe only Kiss and Iron Maiden had a beer. And they mm-hmm. were you know, they weren't the beers that they are now. Like Iron Maiden's beer is good beer now, but like 10 years ago, I felt like it was a little bit more novelty. You know, they went mm-hmm. with something that they could put Eddie on and, yep. you know, but over the years it's a good fucking beer now. And those guys are awesome. I don't know much about the Kiss. I've only seen Kiss Wine. This is a funny story. I'll go back. I'll digress here for a second if you don't mind.
Go for it.
The first time I ever saw Kiss on alcohol was my grandfather and grandmother had like a row of these Kiss wine bottles. And I was like, they don't listen. They listen to jazz and classical. And I was like, why do you guys have this? And it was because they found them at the 99-cent store.
No way.
And I was like, do you know that that actually might be worth some money? Like, they had no idea. They just saw like a fucking wine that had like a crazy label. I mean, by the time Kiss was around, they were probably the parents going, you can't listen to Kiss, you know? But that was the first time I saw Gene Simmons with his tongue out on a wine. I was like blown away. I'm like, there's no way my grandmother knows what that is. And, yeah, it was just funny. And then like come to find out it was a fucking, 99-cent store fucking buy. I was like, damn, that is rad. Anyways, I digress. No, we've never had a beer. We've discussed it many, many times and just, it's never been the right fit. And
you know, is this having like beer companies approaching you when you mentioned discussing it, or is it within the band?
Mostly within the band. And then we kind of, you know, I guess the thing is with us is we all kind of have different tastes in a way on beer too, mm-hmm. and different ideas of the way it should be done. And we're very, I'll say, political about the way we make decisions. Like everyone kind of knows their role. We've been doing this for a long time, but at the same time, everyone has a vote. So if we're not all on board together with the way something gets done, it doesn't get done. That goes to music, merch, shows, everything. Nothing gets done unless it gets the seal of approval from everybody, because we know that we all want the same thing and we all have a skill set and an idea that will help us all together. So I think that in a beer itself, because as you know, beer is, it's an opinion, it's a taste. Like, so if you got a different way of enjoying beer, then it might be different, you know? And that, I feel like that's gonna, that has been a bit of a hindrance. And a couple of years ago, every band under the sun came out with a beer, and we were like, let's let that settle for a little bit. We don't want to be, you know, among, you know, which is funny coming from a guy who got into podcasting 2 years ago, like the hundredth million podcast out there. I was like, yeah, I could throw my hat in that fucking pool. But yeah, it's just, we didn't want to like throw our hat in the pool at the same time, I guess, too.
You guys could make a mix pack. That would be super sick. Where each beer, in the pack is one of your beers for each member.
Dude, that would be amazing. There was an idea. Like, I think we started years ago because when Jimmy was still with us, he had the idea of releasing a beer non Avenged Sevenfold. He just wanted to call it Fat Dog, and he had a whole song. Grab yourself a fat dog, and we're like, why would you call it Fat Dog? So you make it a 7-pack. Why would you make a 7-pack?
Because it's cool.
No. It was more than just being cool. It was because, well, you're standing at the store, you see a 6-pack of beer next to you, and a 7-pack of beer. You're going to get that extra beer. You're going to get that extra fat dog. And that was the idea. I was just like, man, I got to make that fucking beer one day. That would be amazing.
That's a good idea. How about a beer for you, though? A Drinks with Johnny Brew. What beer would that be? What would you call it?
Oh, funny enough, I've been stirring the pot on that already.
Good.
That's on brand, right? It's got to have a Drinks with Johnny beer. And I think the hardcore fans would love it. And those who are of the age to enjoy it. So I've been talking to a couple breweries about doing that. I don't want to give away the name just yet, but, and we haven't, flavor profiled just yet, either, but in my head for what I like is going to be probably something in the double IPA, maybe even triple IPA, with a little citrus to cut that extra butter. I like bitter. Sorry, not butter. that's what I go to. I like the big, heavy, crazy, high content IPAs, but I like them to have like a good flavor that cuts in with it well. Like a citrus seems to be a really good go to that kind of smooths out a really heavy IPA. One of my favorite ones is the Palace Point Watermelon El Dorado. That's a double. And when I first tasted that thing, man, I was like, this is brilliant. And then I realized it was 11.7%. And I was like, why am I getting so drunk? Oh, it's 11.7%. And as you could have a spirit that's a lot higher than that, but you're having a shot of that. You're not having an entire beer of that. And there's something different. And maybe you could help me out here because you're really heavy into the crafts. What is it about, a heavy IPA beer that gives you that different drunk where you're just like, you're almost stoned. Like you're just kind of like, me and my buddies call it koala beer because you just kind of like sit there and you kind of feel like a koala after a while. You're like, fuck, man. It's not the let's get up and party beer, you know?
I think it's the way that we sip it because we sip it some with a big gulp of a beer. So you're ingesting stuff much quicker versus you know that a shot of something is dangerous. So you tend to approach it differently.
Oh, you're supposed to know that it's dangerous. That doesn't. you're presuming something of me there, bud.
Whereas a beer, you're going to gulp it no matter what. If it's a 6.5, a 4.7, or an 11.7 beer, you're still going to attack it with the same vigor. It's not like sipping on a glass of wine where you're just wetting your lips. Mm, it's a different experience.
That's fair.
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Let's wrap this up with a classic wrap-up question. It probably never happens to you, because, you don't enjoy drinking very much. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Oh, I have a few. Over the years, I learned a few different ones. One of them from the late, great Vinnie Paul and my drummer, Jimmy, the Rev Sullivan, was Pedialyte. Mm-hmm. Pedialyte will definitely help. I'd say about 85 to 90% of your hangover is the dehydration that you're getting from alcohol and putting any kind of rehydration in. I later got a buddy of mine turn me on to a thing called Rescue Water that does the same thing. And it actually has some other vitamins and stuff in it that are specific to helping your liver recover as well as hydrating at the same time. So that's that's a great one.
Sounds like a great sponsor to have.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to hit him up for that actually. But I'm giving him a free plug right now. there's that. And then I swear by, no matter how bad you feel, if you could get out and get some sort of exercise and kind of start to sweat it out or even just hit the sauna or steam room and just, try and rejuvenate. I mean, there's a reason why two things about Helsinki and Finland in general are true. One, like super high per capita drinking population. Two, the most sauna bathhouses of any places in the entire world. And there's a correlation there. If you're super hungover, you got like ice all the time. I mean, you guys are pretty up north. You got ice quite often as well. And you go in there into a hot room, sweat it out, and then run outside. I've seen these motherfuckers just run outside by the lake or just jump into the snow and then come back and do that two or three times. And it gets the adrenaline going. It sweats out the alcohol. I mean, as we all know, ice baths, things like that are really good for your body. And we're learning more and more about that, like freezing it up a little bit, the cryo stuff. And, you know, there's something to that.
I've never heard that answer. I like that one. I like it very much. Johnny, thank you so much for taking the time, having a chat with me, talking about your life, music, and craft beer.
Absolutely.
I'm super stoked to have you on the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome to the podcast network. I'm very stoked about it. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Hey, thank you all so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. I had a blast with Johnny. It was really baffling to see how much we had in common growing up. Both of our mothers being aerobics instructors, discovering rock and metal from our fathers. He went on to become a huge international rock star, playing stadiums all across the globe. I ended up playing an extreme death metal band. It's funny how when you start at the same place, you can end up in the same sort of place, but at different levels, and I'm stoked about that. I'm very excited I had the chance to connect with Johnny. His podcast is awesome. If you haven't checked it out, you absolutely should. I was super stoked when he joined the Sound Talent Media podcast roster. Killer podcast, killer host, and I'm stoked to do more things with him. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that on my website, voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I dropped throughout that past week, if I have been a guest on someone else's podcast, as well as the updated links to the live interview Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs, and the updated links to the Brutal Awakenings playlists, which are available on both Spotify and Apple Music, and is curated by my man, Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself. Do it, people. Sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list, because I don't want you to miss a single thing. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have two more episodes coming up this week, one on Thursday and another on Friday. But until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops heads.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream, and in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.